So welcome to this afternoon's meditation class. As you will all know, I hope, that there are two meditation classes happening at the same time. This is the advanced meditation class for the extreme meditators. Now, it's just a class which is for those who have been meditating a long time already. And because here we meditate for 45 minutes. It's a long period. We also have the introduction to meditation class, which is being taught by Bianca, a very wonderful teacher. That is in the room to my right. As you go out from this room, if you turn right, that's the beginner's introduction class to meditation. So if you come to the introduction class, that is the room to go to. This goes a bit deeper into the meditation, also much longer. So in this class of meditation, that we learn how to make our mind really, really still. But it's not just with stillness. There seems to be like a rather sort of superficial argument in meditation traditions in Buddhism for such a long time, is insight and stillness, are the two just related, or does one do first and the other one come later, and is one better than the other? And you never see that discussion in the suttas in the time of the Buddha, in the way that the Buddha described his meditation. This is just whenever we get still, then we can see. When we see, it gives us a means to become further, more still inside ourselves. So the stillness and the insight always work together. And if you haven't, if you've been to other traditions, you may have also seen that instead of stillness, some people use what I think is a very difficult and not very helpful translation of calling this thing concentration. And I often crack jokes about that. This is not a concentration camp. This, we don't teach concentration. If you want to learn concentration, then maybe join the military or join something else. This is learning how to be still. And learning how to be still takes other attitudes of mind, other ways to relate to life and to your mind. Concentration is using force. It actually strengthens your sense of ego, and very often it tires you out quite considerably. But stillness needs something else. Stillness needs wisdom to become quiet, so nothing moves. And even learning how to be still is something which takes a great deal of insight and understanding in the nature of your mind. And I probably say this regularly here, but I just come back from teaching a meditation retreat in Thailand, and I keep on having to say this little simile from Ajahn Chah. He would wave his hand up and down. If you haven't seen me do this before, he waved his hand up and down. He said, "This represents a leaf on a tree. It only moves because of the wind. If the wind stops blowing, it moves less and less and less until it becomes perfectly still all by itself, because that's its natural position, what we call these days its default position, to be perfectly still. It's not as if you have to hold it still. It's not as if you have to force it to be still. It's not that you have to train it to be still. You just have to protect it from all these other influences which make it move." So, he said that not because he was a botanist. He said that because he was using that as a simile for the mind. Your mind only moves because of the wind of wanting something. Even wanting good things, the mind moves. So imagine the mind doesn't want anything at all. It's perfectly content, totally satisfied. Just happy to be here, not missing anything. Just happy to be with where you are, not having any goals to fulfill, not have any places to reach where you aren't there already. Just perfectly at ease, at rest, no winds blowing. And what happens? Your mind is still moving, but it moves less and less and less. And you can watch it becoming more and more and more still, simply because the cause of movement has been taken away. And this is not what you do. If you do, you want something, you want to change something, then you find the mind does move again. But if you just leave this alone, you stop and watch, almost like from a distance. But then people say, well, if I just sit there and do nothing and no wanting, my mind just keeps thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking. And the obvious answer is, you still want something when you're thinking. One thing you want is to stop thinking. That's the one. And that keeps you thinking, if you understand the psychology of that. But to be able to learn how to not want anything, just to be still, and just let this moment just become more and more and more still. And of course, one of the ways of doing that is just not overreacting to the stimulus of life. A good example is somebody comes in late and they bang the door, just as you're about to get enlightened. Why do they bang the door? We should have instead of banging doors here, we should have those revolving doors, which make no noise. Or we should have, like, other type of doors. Or we should just teach people that if they bang the doors too many times, they are banned from here. We can have a blacklist of door bangers so that we can allow them in the Buddhist society. Maybe that we can give them some sort of punishment, like they have to sweep and vacuum everything for 3 days before we allow them. And the reason I said that is because sometimes that's how people think. That's how I used to think. And I realized the banging of the door stopped about 5 minutes ago. But it's echoing in my mind. It's made me start thinking. A little thought which disappeared has now created this reaction inside of me. That is the biggest problem. The way we react and want things, or want to get rid of things, want to stop things. That is the problem. So a door bangs, it bangs, it's gone. Hardly any disturbance at all. But the thinking mind, that is a disturbance. So in order to become peaceful and not sort of have this thinking mind, you know, I think I probably said this the last time I talked here again, that we always try to stop thinking, and the thinking tries to, how can I stop thinking? And that's another type of thought. And it goes on and on, round and round. But there comes a time when we wonder why. Why, when we've got 40 minutes, 45 minutes, just to be peaceful, why is it that people waste that time thinking? And a lot of the reason is because you're afraid of the silence and the quietness and the peace. Afraid of it. It's one of the reasons why that the longer you come here, the more you develop your meditation, you get less afraid of silence and peace and doing nothing. And of course, from my perspective, I've been a monk now for 45 years. I was meditating about 5 years before I became a monk. So I've been meditating about 50 years now. And just over those years, you get some very peaceful, still states of mind. And at first, they are a bit freaky because you've never been there before. And that's where I developed this, I just call it 3 stages of becoming comfortable with something new. And the first stage is just recognition. You recognize, you know, this place is, you know, it's a good place. Peace is beautiful in your mind. And peace, you recognize you don't have to do anything. It's peace is what happens when you stop doing things. So first of all is recognition. And the next stage is familiarity. You're familiar with peace. You know what it feels like, what it touches like, its taste, its texture. You know, it's so hard to describe peace. Any of these states where things are missing, where there's states of no something, because peace is no noise, no disturbance, it's so hard to give it words to describe it in depth. I remember when I was at school that one of my schoolmasters, he used to give out these punishments to write an essay and write an essay, one of his weird tricks. You had to write a 2-page essay on the subject of the inside of a ping pong ball. There's nothing much you can write about the inside of a ping pong ball. That was why it was very difficult. But anyway, to say something about what peace means, to describe it in words, is very difficult. But nevertheless, after a while, you can realize peace, you can feel peace. Just one of those little methods, which I said a couple of days ago, I think this was in Singapore. On the way back, I taught a one-day retreat in Singapore. And it was just when you come into a room like this, just change your perception coming into a room like this. When you come into a room, you may notice what monks are here, Buddha statue behind me, where the chairs are, where the open places are. Do you ever notice the space in this room? The emptiness in this room? There's more space in this room than there are things. If you can work out the volume. People are just so tiny and small. The space, the air all around us, is far greater. But we tend not to notice that. We've developed our ability to notice things, people, not what surrounds people and connects them, the space between you, which is huge. And once you start doing little tricks, like noticing the space between things, the emptiness which surrounds us, the great void of space which surrounds our planet, when you start to notice the space in things, which is always greater rather than the things themselves, then you have things in perspective. And when that comes to meditation, all those problems and difficulties which create these thoughts in our mind, they are very insignificant. They are so small compared to the great emptiness, if you like, that soon we just put aside those little failings in life, faults in life, things, and look at the bigger picture, the space between things, which surrounds things, which connects things, the emptiness, the stillness, where words haven't yet been formed, where words don't exist, there's just nothing there. It's a place where you can rest. That's one of the reasons why. That when you change attitudes in meditation, use wisdom, really good ideas, different ways of looking at things, you find the thoughts can't really hold your attention. They just vanish. And instead you're just here. And people keep on asking, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to watch? Nothing. But, what should I do next? There is no next. Whoa, but. Stop all this butting. Butt out. And just kick butt, if you like. That's a bit too violent for a Buddhist monk to say. But just see if you can learn how to notice the stillness, the silence, the peace. And when you notice it, you'll soon become familiar with it. You can notice it almost anywhere. It's like a good friend. And once you become a good friend of peace, then you can relax with it, you're at ease with it. You notice it, there's peace over there. And you can chill out together for hours. Don't need to think. Because you're with a good old friend. Do you always think? People tell me they can't stop thinking. But you're watching a movie, you're not thinking. You're observing. You're listening to some music, you're not thinking. You're going on in nature and doing like things like forest bathing. Forest bathing doesn't mean you get so submerged in the trees, but you just allow the trees to over what you might call just to take away all your thoughts. You go to a cliff and just watch the ocean from down below, the ocean from on top. You can just learn how that silence is there many, many times. But we've only learnt and trained ourselves to notice things, objects, rather than what's there before the object. What's there when the object stops? If you learn how to notice that, then the wisdom, the insight, and the comfort of just being with peace, with silence, with nothing, it's not what you do. It's what happens when you stop doing things. When you're at peace with this moment. And then the meditation really takes off. Woohoo. Okay, so that's a quarter of an hour. Preview of the meditation. Bit of information for you. And it's different information every week, I hope, unless I forget. So if you'd like to get yourselves into meditation posture, and once your meditation posture is nice and settled, we can begin today's meditation. So close the eyes. And with the eyes closed, bring awareness onto your posture. We're noticing things first of all. Settle the things, your body, the way you're sitting, so you can have some comfort. It's not just for comfort what we're doing by being aware of our body and being kind to it, actively kind. You will find this is developing, building up two important parts of the meditation, the mindfulness and the kindness. So I begin by checking my legs. I develop mindfulness of my legs with a very simple technique. I just ask my legs as if they are independent living beings. Ask my legs, how do you feel? And I listen for the answer. And if my legs tell me that they could be more comfortable, then I would acknowledge and move. I would adjust my legs. And I would stay there. Are you sure you're still comfortable? Really put a lot of awareness into the beginning of my meditation to make sure that those legs are very relaxed. Once those legs are relaxed, and I cannot get them any better now, then I move up to my buttocks. And I do that because personally that every now and again the buttocks were not looked after at the beginning, and they become sore, even painful. So I put especial attention on this part of the body, moving it, adjusting it on the cushion or on the chair, if you're sitting on a chair, and not moving on until my buttocks are comfortable. I don't want to move during the meditation period. I'm trying to get all this fidgeting completed now. And then I move up to my back. People have many different methods for relaxing the back. I do a stretch. Just like I've seen dogs and cats and even kangaroos stretch in the monastery. Good stretch. And then they relax. And that gives my body, especially my back, a sense of well-being. You can try other little methods, but ask your back if it's comfortable. If you are sitting on a chair, you can lean back. Or you can lean forward. Which is the best for you? The mindfulness, the awareness, gives you the chance to have the feedback. Feedback is where you get a response and you know this is good, or no, no, it could be better. It's almost like your back is advising you rather than you thinking and telling and ordering and controlling your back. That's a key point of meditation. You respond in the moment rather than trying to recall all the instructions. When your back is at ease, then the next thing I do is to be aware of my shoulders. The muscles in the shoulders are often tense. So I ask my shoulders, you know, how are you? And I sometimes imagine my shoulders, just as I said on last night, two strings of muscle, two like sheaves of muscles on either side of the spine being pulled apart. I imagine they're these invisible beings, little demons, monsters, whatever you call them, pulling your shoulder blades apart, and then they let go. When they let go, I can feel the muscles relaxing. They're not being stressed by being pulled apart. They're way more peaceful. Once my shoulders are relaxed, I move my awareness down my body to my hands. Where I put my hands is usually different every meditation. Today I've got them in a common position in the lap, making sure they're comfortable. Do you want to be moved, hands? And if they do, move them, please. This is being mindful, being sensitive to your bodily parts, so you can adjust, move them till they are really comfortable. And then I go back up to my neck, making sure my head is well balanced on top of the neck. Otherwise I get stress, aches in the neck. But also because I do suffer from allergies, hay fever, I want to make sure my throat is relaxed. It's amazing when you develop awareness and you focus that awareness on a part of the body, such as your throat, you soon become aware of it. You soon learn how it works for you and how you can do simple things, just like give it warmth, give it ease, expand it, you soon find what takes away the tightness of tension, which would eventually be the cause of a cough and a disturbance. Awareness of the body and seeing how the body reacts to the way that you associate with it gives you the wisdom of health. And then I move out to my face. The face reflects your state of mind. So you can relax the muscles in your face, around the eyes and the mouth. Once you're aware of them, you relax them, loosen them, so that nothing is being tightened or pulled apart. And by doing that, not only does your face relax, so do your emotions. It's a way of dealing with some of the very severe emotions which affect us, like fear, anger, guilt. So your face becomes relaxed and open. Then I look at my whole body, sort of part by part, just one body. It's pretty relaxed right now. And as I look at the body, if I see anything which is an imbalance, a tension or a pain, I go towards it, I zoom in on it, I focus in on it. And I learn how to relax it. You can relax your digestive system, relax your heart, relax any ache or pain anywhere in the body. Mindfulness, sustained, allows you to learn about your body, how it works. You're not busy thinking other stuff. You're just noticing and being aware of your own body. And I notice that when I relax deeper and deeper, that I experience delight. It's actually a pleasure just to have a body just sitting here, very, very at ease. And I'm mindful, aware of that delightful feeling of relaxation. Feels great. It's not perfect relaxation, but just this much, I can see the pleasure in it. When I do notice delight in relaxation, I never expected this when I first played around with this, as the body gets more relaxed, gets deeper relaxed, when you notice the ease, the freedom, the joy, of having hardly any tension in your body. I enjoy that delight for a minute or two, and then go inside this body, into my mind. And I use that peaceometer, thermometer, speedometer, peaceometer. I've been mindful for years and how peaceful I am inside by watching a thermometer getting a reading. Usually just keeping it simple from 1 to 10. 1 is being really peaceful, 10 is being agitated. Once I see how peaceful I am, or how disturbed, then I start to notice what brings that reading down and closer to 1. And what agitates me. It may not be the same for everybody. But when you start thinking about the past or the future, that usually brings disturbance to the mind. When you want something, it destroys the peace. You may not have much, but this is good enough for you in this moment. In this moment, is what brings that reading of the peaceometer down. Just being now. And also, just looking at the emptiness in your mind. Not the things, but the spaces. The place where there aren't thoughts. Where there's peace and stillness and ease and freedom. Even imagining stillness. Imagining you're in some mountain, some cave. There's nothing to do. Nothing needed. You've got no duties to perform. You're totally free. And you're happy just to be here. See if those ideas bring the peaceometer reading down. I get more and more peaceful. And feel that peace, understand it, and enjoy it. When you start valuing silence and peace, you'll find the thoughts lose their value. They're not so important to you anymore. You're lessening your addiction to the words and the thoughts. And then it just happens. You start being aware of your breathing. It becomes one of the last things which are moving. But when you do watch your breath, don't do it as if you own the breath. You don't control. If it's yours, you can control it. But perceive, look at your breathing as not yours. You're not the driver. The lungs, the body, that does the breathing. All you do is do the watching. You're the passenger. Make sure you don't grab hold of the steering wheel. Be as passive as you can. Just watching the breath come in, the breath go out. That's all. Breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. I'm now going to be quiet. When I start speaking again, it'll be close to the end of the meditation period.
It's getting close to the end of the meditation now. Don't open your eyes yet. Just notice how you feel inside. How peaceful are you? How still? And how relaxed is your body? Notice what causes stillness, deep stillness. What worked for you, what didn't work? So every meditation we learn, we gain an insight, we develop stillness and the delight of a still mind. And now I'm going to ring the gong 3 times. On the 3rd ringing of the gong, please come out from your meditation. So, if there are any questions, I usually answer the questions online first. And then afterwards, maybe if you have a question, you can put your hand up and the microphone will come to you. So here we go. There's 2 questions. And first is, when I meditate, I feel warmth around my throat and neck, which is nice. Also tingling in my hands and feet. I'm wondering if this is a part of stillness. Yes, if you're feeling just a warmth around your throat and neck, that is a sign that you may have some, you know, allergy or inflammation there. And this is your a bit of healing going on there. Tingling in your hands and feet, great. If there's pleasant feeling, it does mean that your mind is becoming peaceful. When the mind is peaceful, what happens is that you do see things with a much more joyous mind. It's a weird thing, but surprised me at first. Of course, teachers would talk about it, but I never understood it. Just how the more still you are, the more aware you become, the awareness becomes more joyful. What you see is more beautiful than you'd expected. And even the tingling feeling in hands and feet or the warmth in your body appears to be very, very pleasant. And this is actually why mindfulness does be developed through stillness, it becomes powerful and joyful. And the next question is from Canada. Is it possible to reach samadhi while walking? And the answer is, if you mean the samadhi of jhanas, it's no. Simply because if it is the deep meditations where the body awareness vanishes, where you cannot feel any part of the body, you do need that body awareness to keep yourself safe, to turn around. And it's almost impossible to do that when you're walking. However, you can get into a deep state of stillness, not totally still, so still. The usual description I do of when my first year in Thailand, I would just spend an hour walking meditation after the chanting and before lunch in this monastery in Bangkok. And the walking, the hall was not that long, but quite naturally, without forcing it, I would walk very slowly. My field of attention, what I was focusing on, was all the amazing muscles and feelings in my feet and legs as they moved, to notice just how my feet felt on the carpet, and just the first part of my foot which moved up, the last part, and just how just to move the feet up, one foot, say the right foot, and to move it forward and then to allow it to go on the ground. It was thousands of different movements were required, which is why there's so many things to watch and just one step. So it would take me 1 hour just to move from one end of the hall to the other and then turn around and go back again. And there was this one occasion, which many people have heard me say, that I was very peaceful just watching one of my feet just move and separate from the floor, so fascinated. And I could hear a sound. It was a sound a long distance away. And it was saying, Brahma Wang So. Someone was calling me. But it was such a long distance away. But it was enough for me to take my attention away from the feelings in my feet and put it into my right ear. And then I realized that this was somebody, a monk, shouting into my ear right next to it. But that's what it felt like when you were, you know, really just focusing so still just on just the movement of the feet when you were walking. Any disturbance was a huge distance away. And of course then I realized, oh, I was supposed to finish early to go to an invitation to a ceremony. And I'd forgotten all about it. But because, you know, this was a monastery and monks knew what happened in meditation, they just understood what was happening. They kept on just talking, Brahma Wang So. It's like you're going up the gears again, you know, from first gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, whatever. And you just can't come out so quickly. Until eventually, after 3 or 4 minutes, probably was about that time, I managed to turn around to that monk and say, what? It took me a while to get out of that deep state of peace. It wasn't a jhana. It wasn't very deep, but it was still some state of samadhi and stillness. And it was so enjoyable. It was so much fun. That's why it's so hard to come out. It just, you know, you've let go of your own sort of wanting, just happy to be there. And for someone to get you out took about 3 or 4 minutes. So I've never been able to get into deeper samadhi than that, doing walking meditation. Because usually what happens, how I was trained by Najan Chah, if you really get that still, then just sit down and just be safe and comfortable. And who knows, maybe the body might sort of get into the total release of a jhana. But where you are walking, it certainly is helpful when you're doing walking meditation. Because if you're sitting down, sometimes you get a ache here, a pain there. Sometimes the body can be quite disturbing. So doing some walking meditation, it does mean that you just have an alternative. When your body gets stiff, then you walk. And then after walking for a while, you can sit down again. And you still continue that stillness, that peace, that kindness, that sort of slowness of the mind, that thoughtlessness of the mind. That's why over at Bodhinyana Monastery, people always get these little cartoons and jokes now of monks. The abbot was talking to one of the junior monks and said, I must give you this wonderful prize, the most thoughtless monk of the week. Well done. Because sometimes we say being thoughtless is a criticism. But for a meditator, That's an enormous compliment. You have been so thoughtless, husband. Congratulations. Okay, are there any questions from the audience actually here? Oh, I thought I'd get one from you, Chris. Come on. The microphone's coming.
So I seldom get a chance to speak to you now. You're on the move so much, and so am I. So I relish this opportunity. This question is about really refining attention and paying attention to the arising aspect of experience as you're meditating. And if you really go to the leading edge, the front edge of now, past the witnesser, there's nothing. There's just an allness. And you stay with that constantly. There's just no, you can't think. There's no you. There's no, not even a witnesser. I think you probably understand what I'm talking about there. Okay? That's a practice that I've been doing, and it happens quite regularly. But it can contract into a single-pointedness spontaneously, where there's almost like a nothingness or a stillness, deep stillness, and it can go backwards and forwards. So you get this spontaneous, uncontrolled by me, expansion and contraction. Now, I'm familiar with other traditions which talk about this quite clearly in terms of what's happening, but I'd be very interested in your explanation of that. There's no messing around with it, either in the contracted form or the expanded form. There's no controlling in the whole thing. It just runs itself. And sometimes there are limiters there, but they don't seem to be central to the whole thing. I wonder if you could explain what's happening, please.
Okay. It's when one goes right into the now and one stops speaking. First of all, many people experience a fear there at the beginning, and they find it difficult to let go of thinking and controlling. But, you know, you gave the answer there, because when you said there's no you there, you have to let go of this identity. Where there is a me, there is some doing of something, some controlling. Where there's ownership, I said this last night, where there's ownership, there's doing, responsibility. When you let go of ownership, the owner vanishes too. So it's a bit scary for people at first. They think, oh, I'm disappearing. But it's wonderful to disappear. The joy is what's important. And that's one thing in that description which was missed out. The joy, the deep peace, the bliss, it probably was there.
Yeah, it was. It's definitely high ecstasy stuff. It's sort of orgasmic energy at times. But I struggle sometimes to actually calm that down to get to this place of stillness, because that joy can be disruptive.
Well, you don't just do anything. You don't try and calm anything down. You disappear. It calms down all by itself. So that is where there is some disturbance there. Sometimes when people think, oh, they're not doing anything, they're letting go. If that was really the case, then that stillness would just go in. One of the nice ideas with stillness is if something is still long enough, it vanishes. Just like the sound of the fans, I can hear them now. After a while, because that doesn't move, it doesn't change. It disappears from your consciousness. Your body, you can feel it. But if you sit still during meditation, after a while you can't feel your body. Stillness is a cause for disappearance. So the body vanishes, and much other things vanish. And you see that what you've been is vanishing. It was just quite a burden. It's like you're putting down bags and you feel so free and light and ecstatic when those things vanish. Just even little things like wanting. When you imagine just you want nothing in the whole world, but wanting has vanished, you're just here. And here starts to disappear. So this is where that the idea of contracting and expanding That can be there for a little while, but after a while, that should just disappear as you get really, really still. And the nimittas, they're helpful to develop. All that is, a nimitta, you can read it in some of the books. I usually don't talk about nimittas on the Saturday afternoon class, only just the retreats. Those nimittas, it's your mind you're seeing, your sixth sense. Clear, beautiful, brilliant. And they're not the only pair. They get pure when your five senses are totally subdued. So you can't hear sounds, you can't feel your body. And the five senses disappear.
Yeah, I've listened to you long enough for so many years to know that I don't get absorbed and preoccupied with nimittas that flood up and down in my mind in deep meditation. I know about that, Ajahn. Hanging around you long enough to know that.
Yes,
yeah. I'm talking here, this deep stillness, it seems to stay for a bit and then go back into activity. Is it a wave-like motion that can go, come and go, and should I just accept it either way?
It can, but the wave has to stop.
Slowly it peters out.
Yeah, of course, okay. Peters out and just goes so deep. Everything which was moving stops. And disappears. And at every disappearance, there's a more bliss. And what happens, we try never to think about it, to judge it, to assess it at the time. This was one thing which I learnt as a scientist. You never just assess or think about the meaning of the results which you're writing down in the results ledger until you've got all the results in. And then you find conclusions. And it's the same with meditation. You wait until the meditation's over, or almost over, and then you look into it. And if it is a very peaceful experience, it's very powerful. You can't forget it. And you can just look upon it and just see what was there. But somebody asked me in Singapore two days ago, he said, when we do come out of deep meditations, what should we look for? And I said, look for what's missing. Don't look for what was there. Look for what's not there. And that's far more informative.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so great. We can, it's 4:16. So it's time to finish off. 1 minute extra. But I won't charge anyone extra for that today. So just bow three times, and then we can go and do what we need to do.